C2M. Number 8A.
We come now to the next tone of life, and in this tone of life we will see the following, that in proportion as man gives up the belief that he has a humanly propagated life, his eternal being, coexistence with God, appears. Now we can see, in proportion as man gives up the belief that he has a humanly propagated life, that was the subject of the first five main subjects in the chapter, namely to show that he has a humanly propagated life. And now Mrs. Eddy comes and says, now you have to give it up. And so to say, shows, but that naturally you can only do if you have matured really to that point. So there are various difficulties that can arise when one gives it up ignorantly or too early, and that we will see then in the following paragraphs. So I read first about life. Jealousy is the grave of affection. You see, at once the grave of affection is the counterfeit of life. Life is that which lifts us out of the grave, whereas jealousy, the counterfeit of love, we are here in love as life, the counterfeit of love, jealousy is the grave of affection. The presence of mistrust, again, mistrust here is a sense of jealousy, the counterfeit of love. So the presence of jealousy, where confidence is due, withers the flowers of Eden and scatters love's petals to decay. Again, the counterfeit of life. So that mistrust brings what? Not life, but the counterfeit, the withering of the flowers, the scattering of love's petal to decay. So be not in haste to take the vow until death do us part. Consider, this is a very interesting sentence now, consider its obligations, its responsibilities, its relations to your growth and to your influence on other lives. So here we see that marriage or the wedding is not something that is egotistical, that has to do with, do I like it? Do I gain something from it? What can I get out of it? It always shows that we should consider it in an individual and collective way. Is it something that is good as well for our growth as for the influence on other lives? And this naturally is very seldom considered in a marriage covenant or getting married. It's just two people getting the most out of it and not considering if that has any effect on the world. And I feel only then is a relationship right when it is blessing the whole world. Therefore, one always has to consider, well, does it take us away from our true individuality, from our mission in the world? Does it restrict our mission in the world? Will I be just as free to do what God tells me to do with, if I'm bound to somebody or to an organization? Both is the same case. Or will I be restricted in my individuality? Therefore, the moment one sees that one would be limiting oneself, then such a relationship is not right. So one cannot just say, well, I like to marry because I like somebody, but one has to see, well, what is implied in regard to my work in the world? and not just the relationship to the other person? Does it affect my work in the world? And this is a very big thing to be considered. Do I have afterwards just to work to make money so as to support the family and the children? Or can I work that which God wants me to work, no matter if it would support the family or not? So these are very great questions which one should consider when one is young, and see that one's individuality is by no way and in no direction limited through a personal relationship, through an organizational relationship. That's the very same thing. If an organization hinders us to fulfill that mission which God has given to the individual, then a bondage to that organization is wrong. Therefore, we have to be careful that not to lose our human rights and give away our human rights through any relationship. So this is one point in life that has to do much more with the sense of jealousy and mistrust which binds human being into narrow confines. Now, something very different is being brought up in the next paragraph also, is the tone of life. I never knew more than one individual who believed in agamogenesis. She was unmarried, a lovely character, was suffering from incipient insanity, and a Christian Scientist cured her. That Christian Scientist was Mrs. Eddy. I have named her case to individuals when casting my bread upon the waters, and it may have caused the good to ponder and the evil to hatch their silly innuendos and lies, since salutary causes sometimes incur these effects. She speaks of here in the side note insanity and agamogenesis. Agamogenesis is reproduction without sex, asexual reproduction, and it is a form of insanity. And we know how in the history of Christian Science such cases have turned up, where one just has not seen the right place value of the sexual reproduction and believed that this is possible in a, so to say, in a virgin birth, and in this way discrediting really the Christian Science and the idea of Christian Science. So she brings out here the insanity that can arise when one thinks, as a mortal we can bring forth immortals, or that as a mortal we can bring forth mortals in another way than the usual way of reproduction, and all that is a kind of insanity. That's why she said, let marriage still allow until one has reached a higher understanding of life. Actually, I have come to 23, the perpetuation of a floral species by bud and cell division is evident, but I discredit the belief that agamogenesis applies to the human species. So she stands really with both feet on the earth and says, well, this is the law of the mortal, that reproduction is by sex and not in an asexual way. You know what I mean by asexual? It is neither this nor that. Asexual means free from. Then she goes to the core of life with the next section. Christian Science presents unfoldment, not accretion. Now she begins to correct that whole sense and says, after all, we have not to do with accretion. More and more mortals, more and more people on the earth. But it has to do with unfoldment. It manifests no material growth from molecule to mind. From molecule to mind, that's the ordinary propagation from a molecule through a fetus up to a birth and to culturing in the baby the mind, so that matter becomes mind, so to say, a transition from mind, from matter to mind. But actually, it is an impartation of the divine mind to man and the universe. So this is the point, that Christian Science presents an impartation of the divine mind to man and the universe. Proportionately as human generation ceases. Now we get the transition coming to an end. Proportionate as human generation ceases, the unbroken links of eternal harmonious being will be spiritually discerned. Again, you have that strong term, will be discerned. So, in a way, once the people say, well, if there would be no babies and if there would no be propagation, then the world would die out. Well, I'm not afraid of that now, that the world will die out, that there will be not enough people in the world. I think the problem is just the other way around, that there are too many people on this earth. But she says, this is not the question. It's not the question that should there be more people or less people, because we don't have to do with accretion. We have to do with something very different, namely with unfoldment, with spiritual unfoldment. That is our sense of life and giving life. So in proportion as the human generation ceases, we do not have to fear that life will go out, but on the very contrary, then the unbroken links of eternal harmonious being, can you hear, eternal harmonious being, life, will be spiritually discerned. Now it is discerning life spiritually. At the beginning of the chapter, it was discerning life as material and as material propagation. Now it will be discerned spiritually. And man, not of the earth, earthly, but coexistence with God, will appear. Again, we have the will. So it is absolutely forcible. So we cannot say, well, we have to have more and more children on the world, because then, or without that, life would disappear from the earth. Quite on the contrary, we would get the true sense of life, namely man, not of the earth earthly, but coexistent with God, will appear. So finally, as one matures in human life, one begins to see more and more that the human life is just one big enigma, that the human life is just not worth anything. When one is young, one feels that human life is worth everything. The older one gets, the mature one gets, one can see how stupid the whole concept of human life is in comparison to what divine life is, to what comparison to spiritual life. And so this disillusionment that one gets is therefore a positive factor and not a negative factor. It helps really to reach out and to long for a more spiritual adherence, until one sees the coexistence with God. Where one sees there is only one life, if there is only one life, that life is spiritual and it doesn't belong to a person, it doesn't belong to people, it isn't in people, it is a spiritual sense of beingness. And that is that which satisfies one's heart. Then we come at this point, I think the subject turns and we get here truth coming in. My epitome here is in proportion as man understands the truth of being, the real ideal man appears. So again we have the appearing of the real ideal man and not the appearing of a mortal. So we are at towards the end of that whole range from a mortal to the immortal, and it shows that this is a matter of understanding. The text reads here, the scientific fact that man and the universe are evolved from spirit. Now we come to the scientific fact. At the beginning we had the facts of natural science, of natural propagation. Now we come to the scientific fact, namely that man and the universe is evolved from spirit and so are spiritual. That we don't have to deal with a material earth, with a material world, that this is just a shadow world and a world of illusion, but that we really have to do with a spiritual world, is as fixed in divine science as is the proof that mortals gain the sense of health only as they lose the sense of sin and disease. So that we never get the true sense of health by being healed medically. We always only get the sense of true health if we see that man is spiritual. Only from that point of view we get a true sense of health. Not just through healing the body, that's a science of physical harmony, but the science of spiritual harmony is to see that man is spiritual and therefore can never be sick, therefore can never get sick. He can't become sick. It's not possible. Something that is spiritual can never be sick because it has not the body. And this is the aim towards which we are working. Mortals can never understand God's creation by believing that man is a creator. Can you see, this seems so simple. It's always the simple statements that are the deepest statement, and because they are so simple, we run over it and go on and never stop and think, what does it mean? This is such a terrific sentence which says mortals can never understand God under some condition. Isn't it something that shocks us, because we want to understand God? Our deep desire is to understand God. And so therefore we ask ourselves, now what hinders us to understand God? Why can't we understand God? And in a simple manner, Mrs. Eddy said, while believing that man is a creator. Now, this is a belief that is innate in each one of us. We all talk about my father and my mother, every one of us, and about my children. They are my. I possess, I have a father, I have a mother, I have children, I have a husband, I have a wife. It's constantly to see that man is a creator, that we are being created by mortals, that we wed ourselves to a mortal, that with that mortal we create another mortal, and that they again are mortals. And therefore, as long as we are in that belief, we can never understand God. Never. And that's very hard to see, because, as I said, we all have that innate consciousness that we are mortal, that we come from mortals, and mortals come from us. Therefore, as we said before, at the tone of life, the way out is really to see very consciously, and not just as a statement, very consciously that actually I have everything from the divine mind. That my parents are the parent mind, and that mind is a capital M. And from that mind I have everything. I live by that mind. I live because of that mind. I fulfill my mission because of that mind. And I can always see the bigness of that parent mind. And I try as often as I can always to see right now that divine mind is pushing me. Right now that divine mind is manifesting itself in me. That mind wants to use me as a channel, as an instrument, as a tool for the plan of mind. That mind has a terrific big plan. It's a plan of salvation, and it uses me right now. And so I come into much closer consciousness and conscious consciousness that my parents have nothing to do with my life, that is cut off, and that I'm only bound to God. And I think only as we do that we are more transparent, really, for the understanding of God. That understanding God, as she says here, is not possible as long as we believe that man is a creator, and therefore that we are the creation of a man. God's children already created, that's something else, will be cognized only as man finds the truth of being. And so again we can see man has not been created. God's children already created. And she comes nearer to the point that we drop that sense of creation. Even if we say God created me, I still have not quite a scientific sense, because God is not the creator in the sense that he began something, that there is a point of departure where he created man and the universe. What was before? So creation is a human concept, a very limited concept. But naturally it is a much higher concept that God created man than man created man. But finally, she indicates here that we must find that we have never been created, that we are a fact in being. So that's why she speaks about the scientific fact that man is evolved from spirit and is spiritual. Now something that is spiritual can never have been created, because spiritual is without beginning and end. So even the sense of creation must go out of our consciousness. So until finally it becomes a state of beingness, because creation is still a days of creation quality. It's not the beingness quality, not the numeral of infinity. It's a day of creation quality. And the days of creation must finally melt or blend into the numerals of infinity. So that at that point I go a step further and begin to see, before Abraham was, I am. Before Abraham was, man is. Man is not a created thing from God, it's a fact in being. It's a fact in divine being. And facts have never been created. 2 and 2 equal 4 have never been created. They are facts in being. So little by little we come closer and closer. Thus it is that the real, ideal man appears in proportion as the false and material disappears. So in the proportion as the first 5 subjects disappear, in that proportion we begin to see the real man and the real universe. Then there is a lost subject of love. Love as love. We epitomized it by saying the understanding that there is only one creator, God, brings the assurance that man can never be separated from God. Therefore, he is deathless, perfect, and eternal. So we come to the climax, to that statement which we usually take as the beginning of our treatment of our statements, where we say, well, man is the image and likeness of God, man is eternal, man is perfect, and we start out there, which is true, which is an absolute fact, but we can see that this is the climax of a development through that whole chapter. So we read here, no longer to marry or to be given in marriage, referring to the scriptural note here, neither closes man's continuity nor his sense of increasing number in God's infinite plan. Again, at this point she takes up the sense, well, if there is no more propagation of children, then the earth will be without people and will die out. And she says, no, that does not close man's continuity, because man's continuity at this point then is seen as the continuity of the spiritual idea man, and is no more measured materially and mortally, and says how many people are on the world, how many people understand science. We are no more concerned with the people universe at point. And so we increase in number in God's infinite plan, namely the increase of ideas, the increase in understanding. There is nothing much more satisfying than to see the true sense of propagation, the true sense of increasing in bringing forth ideas. That's the birth of ideas. In bringing forth new concepts of science, in bringing forth new altitude in science. This is the increasing number in God's infinite plan.